Daddy, what are you doing?
We're recording a podcast.
Who's listening?
Islander fans are listening.
Where are they?
Well, they're right here.
Welcome to the Isles Faithful Podcast with your host, Michael Schoerlein.
Welcome back to the Isles Faithful Podcast. I am your host, as always, Michael Schoerlein, and this is episode number 48. Today is September 22nd, 2020, and joining me this episode is someone you guys will probably question at first because he is the current Blackhawks beat writer for The Athletic, and you'll probably be saying, well, why the heck is he on your podcast? This is an Islanders podcast, Mike, and you guys have called me out on stuff like that in the past, but it's all for good reason. So joining me, I'd like to introduce Mark Lazarus. Mark, what's going on?
I thought I was here to talk about Andrew Ladd and Nick Leddy and nobody else.
What about Anders Lee?
He's not a Chicago guy. He's a Minnesota guy,
that's
isn't
right.
he?
Duh. Listen to me. See, I've had such a crazy week this week already that my brain is already just shot. So I'm sure that'll be great. That'll be great in the reviews of the podcast, like always. So the reason why I wanted to have Mark on, and if you guys follow The Athletic or subscribe to The Athletic, he had a couple weeks back a fantastic article outlining some of the crazy thoughts that were banging around in his head. And look, we're all guilty of that from time to time, but if you don't know, Mark grew up on Long Island, and we'll get to that in a minute. He grew up an Islander fan, and as a pro writer, especially one who covers another team, and he lives in Chicago, I thought it would be really fun to just kick around what we both saw out of the Islanders the last couple of series, ultimately losing to Tampa in the Eastern Conference Final. And I guess we'll kick it off from there. So, Mark, were you born in 1980 also?
I was.
All right, so that's two things now that we have in common, and this is why that article kind of hit home for me. I recently turned 40 in August, and obviously the both of us haven't experienced a run like this by the Islanders since we were 13 and 14, basically. I think it was like ninth grade in high school. So, you know, just take me back through your time on Long Island and, you know, how you came to be an Islanders fan, and we'll take it from there.
Yeah, I mean, I was born in March of 1980, so that's like, what, 2 months? The cup used to be handed out by the end of May, so we're talking 2 months. I was 2 months old when they won their first cup, and, you know, what, three? I can't even do the math in my head when they won the last one, so I don't remember any of them. I remember the drive for five a little bit. I had a hat, it was like a painter's cap I got as like a giveaway at a game. I talked about the drive for five. I remember the Easter epic a little bit. I was seven. And then I just remember nothing but horrible pain and misery, basically, the rest of my teenage years and adult life. 1993, I mean, I'm a Giants fan. I'm a Mets fan. I remember the ball going through Buckner's legs. I remember Scott Norwood wide right and obviously the two more recent Giants Super Bowls. I loved the Knicks in the mid-90s. Those teams were like my favorite teams ever. But sadly, the biggest sporting moment of my life as a fan was the win over the Penguins in 93 in the second round. Dave effing Volek. My first job was in Pittsburgh, and I would bring up his name and people would just start gnashing their teeth and rending garments. My fantasy hockey team name when I was in a Pittsburgh media league was the Fighting Dave Voleks, just to piss them off. That was it. A second round win, which is like, you know, now that I've covered two Stanley Cup runs and another conference final run. I mean, that's the most pathetic thing you've ever heard, right? That in 40 years of my life, the most fun I ever had was a second round win in the playoffs. But that's what being an Islanders fan was for people our age, is we never got anything good. We never got any kind of excitement. I mean, I'm a Mets fan, and I bitch all the time about how bad the Mets are, but they just won the pennant 5 years ago. It's not the same as it was being an Islanders fan all those years. So for me to watch this kind of emotionally detached from it was kind of a surreal feeling.
Now, you know, obviously you had a team up there that you cover have a bunch of success, and you know, you talk about a bunch of different things in your article, having been removed from it and having to suppress these feelings. Like, was there any kind of like a moment where you kind of got caught up in what the Islanders were doing and that fandom kind of creeped back into your life?
Not really. It's I'll put it this way. Like, I didn't miss any of the Islanders games. I watched a ton of hockey over the last couple of months. I watched all the games I could, but I had no problem, say, going to sleep and when Vancouver was playing St. Louis or whatever, and it's 11 o'clock at night and I got to be up in the morning to get my kids to school. I had no problem turning that game off. I wouldn't have done that with an Islanders game. I would have stayed up for that, and I made sure I was home for all those. So I still have, I guess I have an interest in the team. I want to watch their games. I'm not emotionally invested in it, though. That's the thing that it was about 4 or 5 years ago that I realized that. Like, I knew that my fandom had waned. I always say I'm a bigger fan of the game than I've ever been. I'm not one of these jaded sports writers who hate sports. That's not me at all. I love sports. I'm still, you know, I love hockey more than I ever have. I just don't really, I have a hard time getting emotionally wrapped up in it. You know, it's hard for me to root for these guys as these, like, you know, when you're a kid, you're these mythical creatures, these titanic figures. And I've talked to them all, and I see them all the time, and it's they're just normal guys who just happen to play hockey, and I think that takes some of the shine off of it. But beyond that, it's just, you can't really do this job effectively and root for another team. So you just learn to turn that part of your brain off. And, you know, maybe when I retire someday, or if I'm not doing this anymore, if I'm covering something else, or, you know, whatever it is, maybe I can rekindle that. Maybe I can light that pilot light again. But it's hard. Like, if this run didn't do it, and it didn't do it. Like, I wasn't yelling and screaming. I was reacting whenever anyone scored positive or negative for the Islanders. I don't know if that's ever going to come back. I don't know if I'll be able to regain that again. And that's, frankly, it's kind of a bummer because, I mean, that was my entire childhood, was yelling and screaming about the Islanders.
That's got to be tough because, you know, I don't know if you know this about me. I mean, you know, you just basically followed me on Twitter so we could talk about this, but from...
Yeah, I don't know anything about you, man. This could be a total, like, you could be catfishing me for all I know.
Nah, from 2007 till when I moved to East Hampton, I think I moved out here, it was like 2011 or 2012. I was a season ticket holder, but I was also part of the Islanders blog box, if you remember that. And I got a press pass for all those years. I didn't really get a lot of great teams to cover, and Peter Boddy and I kind of talk about this all the time. Katie Strang, too, as well. She's actually a really good friend of mine. And, you know, it's to sit in the box. I know what it's like not to be able to cheer because, you know, you're trying to act professional. And a lot of, you know, your fellow writers kind of took most of us under their wing and really respected what we were doing. Because I kind of treated it like it was my job as much as it's not. And I still do to that end. I kind of parlayed the blog into podcasting because that's kind of like new media now, right? So... Mm-hmm.
A lot of teams put the blog in the press box, so that's a nice thing that they do there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I haven't done it in a long time. I know there's a couple of people that I wrote with that still do, but obviously, you know, look, life changes. It wasn't my job. I got married, had kids, and things kind of had to take a backseat for a little while, but I digress. Here I am. I'm having fun with this, and that's good enough for me. But I understand to an extent is my point that, you know, you have to suppress feelings, and I can't imagine writing about another team. Because, look, hockey is the greatest sport that there is, in my opinion. I love it. I've been a fan my whole life. I've played my whole life. And to be able to get paid to write about my favorite sport, I wouldn't care who I was writing about, essentially. So, bottom line, long story short, I appreciate what you're doing and what you have to do. Now, did you see the footage of Chris King and Greg Picker doing the radio call on video with them having muted celebrations in the box?
No, I didn't.
All right, so I'll make sure I send that to you. It was kind of funny because it goes against everything about what we spoke about. Granted, they're both broadcasters for the team.
No, radio guys, those are team employees. They're supposed to be doing, like, you know, you want your radio guys to be invested in and a little homery. I mean, I got no problem with that at all. John Weideman, a Blackhawks radio guy, I mean, when they won the cup, I mean, his head basically exploded. That's what you want from your radio guys.
Oh, absolutely. No, I'm not doubting that for a second. I just thought it was pretty funny.
I'll tell you what. Back in 2012, before I got hired by the Sun-Times to cover the Blackhawks, I was a suburban sports editor covering, like, high school sports and Valparaiso University basketball, like, low-level stuff for a number of years. And the Super Bowl was in Indianapolis that year, so like 10 months ahead of time I applied for a credential. Hey, something's in Indiana, I'm gonna go cover it. And then it turned out the Giants were in it, which was kind of crazy, and against the Patriots, who I freaking hate. So, you know, That was gonna be like my big test of like, can I go and be a professional in this setting? I wrote a glowing feature about Tom Brady, who I loathe, and then you know that was a great Super Bowl. It wasn't the helmet catch one. It was the Mario Manningham pass, which was also a great game that came down to the wire. And I distinctly remember giving one fist pump when Manningham caught that pass from Eli. That was the only time I reacted to anything. And I was, that whole fourth quarter, I was surprising myself on how calm I was. Because I remember I was losing my mind 4 years earlier when I was at my buddy's house and we're drinking and watching the game. And that was the most stressful thing ever. And here it was. And it's basically the same situation, except I'm there live. And I was calm. I was able to remove myself from that. I was surprised by that. But I think that comes with the job. As you do this long enough and you see enough sporting events and you write about enough things, you're just rooting for the story. You really are. I mean, in that situation, would I prefer the Giants to win the Super Bowl? Sure. This playoffs, by the time everybody was eliminated, would I have preferred the Islanders to win the Stanley Cup? Sure. My dad would have loved it. A bunch of my friends would have loved it. It would have been a great story. But there's a difference between preferring an outcome and caring about an outcome. And that's what I've been able to kind of, you know, remove for myself, is that I don't care who wins. And it's harsh to say, and Blackhawks fans get mad all the time because I always tell them, I'm not a Blackhawks fan. I don't care if the Blackhawks win or not. It does not matter to me one iota. I don't go home going, ah, I can't believe they missed that open net and this, that, and the other thing. I don't care. I root for a story. There are guys in the team who I genuinely like and have good working relationships with that I hope do well in their lives. That's fine. But I don't care if they win or lose. And you have to be able to reach that point mentally in this job, or you're not going to be able to do your job very effectively.
See, to me, I feel like that would be really freeing and give you a really good basis to write off of. Because, like, I'll use Stape as an example, because obviously he grew up a Rangers fan. So Islander fans mm-hmm. get on him a lot because, you know, he will use that much to the chagrin of Isles fans. And it's kind of funny to see people get amped up. He's not doing it to really piss people off, just to kind of rile up Isles Twitter, because it could be a kind of crazy place at times.
No, it's fun.
So, I mean, I get that. And look, that's what makes great writers great. They can sound excited about things that they might not normally be 100% into. And I appreciate that. Now, as a quote unquote outsider of the team, what is your viewpoint on the turn the Islanders have taken here under new ownership, under the general manager of Lou Lamoriello, under head coach Barry Trotz? What are some of the things that you can see maybe as a writer of an opposing team? Obviously, you only get to see the Islanders, but what, two times a year? So,
well, to me, it's just strange to see an Islanders team with sound ownership, with an actual arena being built, with a good coach, with a roster and a GM that seems to be building towards something. They have a plan. They have a purpose. And for the last 30 goddamn years, that hasn't been the case. So it's strange for me. It's good to see. I mean, you want markets like that to succeed. I mean, people always call it a small market. It's in freaking New York. It's not a small market. It just acts like a small market. It's like the Chicago White Sox. The Chicago White Sox are not a small market team. They just act like one for years. And now they're not acting like one, and they're great, and everyone's getting all excited about it. That's what you want to see. You want to see these teams succeed. And just objectively looking at the Islanders, that's... You can't look at that team and that fan base and not be happy for them. I don't, other than Rangers fans and Devils fans, I can't imagine anyone's not happy for a fan base that's just been, I mean, Blackhawks fans, again, to put it back to them, in 2004, ESPN said that the Blackhawks were the worst professional sports franchise in North America of all the major sports. And I looked at that, I remember thinking, they're not as bad as the Islanders. But they were really bad. I mean, they had terrible ownership. Their home games weren't on TV. Fans were leaving in droves. It was terrible. And in 2010, just as an outsider, just as a hockey fan in Chicago, it was awesome to see that fan base rewarded with success. And it's the same thing with the Islanders. If you're still an Islanders fan in 2020, if you have stuck it out for this long, you're a great hockey fan. And I want to see great hockey fans, whether it's new markets like Vegas or Seattle or older markets like New York. I want to see them. I want them to have the happiness that, you know, Montreal had for decades at a time, that the Red Wings had forever. You want to spread the love there because it makes the sport better. It grows the fan base. You know, you're not making any new Red Wings fans, but you can make a lot of new Islanders fans right now. And the more this team does well, the bigger the fan base is going to grow out there. And that's only good for the game.
It is. And, you know, I was going to bring up the fact that Blackhawks games weren't, or the home games weren't on television. That's just, I understood maybe the principle behind it, you know, maybe 50.
This was in 2006, not like 1970-something. It's unbelievable.
I know. It would have made more sense decades prior to that when, you know, television wasn't really as good. I shouldn't really say good, but as, you know, technologically advanced as it is now. I mean, I was upstate a couple of weeks ago for a wedding, upstate New York, that is, and
I know what you meant.
I shouldn't have to explain to you, but I was on my phone watching a game via Slingbox. I don't know if you know what Slingbox is.
Yep. And
I was in a hot tub at the house we rented watching the, was it the Flyers series? I believe it was the Flyers series. So just to show you like how crazy like television has come, you could watch on any device, anywhere, as long as you have an internet connection. And, you know, I think that ownership group was a little behind the times as far as that goes. And look, like you said, I want the NHL to succeed. I want these small market teams to be good. You think I want to sit and watch Buffalo struggle and Buffalo fans struggle? No. Did I want to watch the Chicago fans struggle? No. Same as with any other team across the league. So it's exciting that you have these new market teams like Las Vegas coming in and finding success straight out of the gate. I'm hoping for the same thing out of Seattle. And then look at Dallas. Dallas hasn't won regularly in a long, long time. Have they made the playoffs as a perennial potential contender? Sure. So to see them find success, actually, hopefully, make quite a series here against Tampa, because that would just make this Islander fan extremely happy. But, you know, for sure, like I don't, as a fan, we've struggled as a fan base for a long time. So all the things seem to be lining up, and it's only a matter of time before they punch the right buttons and get the right personnel and make it past the Eastern Conference Final for the first time in our adult life.
Yeah, and I don't know if they'll win a Stanley Cup in this era. That's a long shot at best. It's hard to win the Stanley Cup. I remember, you know, in 2015, the Blackhawks beat the Lightning in the Stanley Cup Final, and we're all like, well, that Lightning team's going to win a bunch of Cups over the next, you know, handful of years. 5 years later, and this is their first real crack, and they couldn't make it into the Conference Final, but they weren't, you know, they haven't won anything yet. And they still might not win this series. Dallas is legit, and they play a game that is, you know, conducive to winning in the playoffs. So, you know, you could be very good for a long time and not win jack squat. But that's a whole lot better than being awful for a long time and not winning jack squat. You'd rather have heartbreak than just nothing. So the Islanders are set up for long-term success here with guys like Barzal and Beauvillier and, you know, the criminally underappreciated forever Josh Bailey and all these guys. The defense, they got great young players on there. I still get confused every time I hear Taves and it's not a Blackhawks game. But there's a lot of good young talent on that team. They're going to be good for a while. They've got, for my money, the best hockey coach in the game. You know, you might not everybody might not like his style of coaching, but there's no coach that has an impact the way he has an impact. He can single-handedly change a franchise's fortunes. There's not a lot of guys out there that can do that. So you got good ownership. You got the new arena. Players are going to want to go play with the island. Free agents are going to want to go to the island for the first time in forever because they're not going to have to worry about having, you know, day beds in Brooklyn and the ridiculous commutes and all that. There's reason for hope in the long term here that this wasn't just some kind of spike and fluke. And that's exciting. If you're an Islanders fan, that's got to be exciting because you've put up with a lot of shit for a lot of long, 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 long time. And if anyone deserves just competitiveness in their franchise, it's Islanders fans. So these are going to be good times, whether you win a cup or not. It's going to be a lot more fun than it's been.
You know, it's funny you say that about free agents, because just today on a Zoom call, one of the Islanders owners, John Ledecky, said the New York Islanders are now a top center discussion when it comes to free agents. And obviously this year being, you know, 2020, I mean, what really can we just say more than 2020, which only has a few months left, thank God. But, you know, I'm curious to see with the flat salary cap and some unrestricted free agents in this offseason, you know, maybe looking to take like a shorter term deal. There's going to be a lot of cap crunch, as I'm sure you're aware, with some teams rumored to potentially having to sell due to, you know, the financial situation of some of the clubs. I hope that's not the case. It's going to be pretty interesting to see what happens with some of the Islanders restricted free agents this offseason as well. I mean, the team could look relatively the same. It could look pretty different. That's one of the things about Lou Lamoriello, though, and probably one of the frustrating things for you guys as writers is you don't really know anything that's going to come out of him until it does. So what are your thoughts on some of the situations here just across the board in the NHL with free agency coming up?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously I cover the Blackhawks and they're in cap hell with the Brent Seabrook contract and everything. And they were counting on a big rise in the cap, and having a flat cap for up to 2 or 3 years is devastating to them. They don't know what they're going to do. I'm hoping that the landscape will change at least for a couple of years here, where it'll become more like the NBA, where you'll have big free agents not looking for those 7-year contracts, but like betting on themselves, go chase a championship somewhere for a year or two. I'd love to see Taylor Hall take like a 1-year deal to go to Colorado and just go, screw it, I'm going to go play with Nathan MacKinnon. I'm going to put up 100 points. I'm going to go win a Stanley Cup, and then I'll get paid, you know, when the financial fortunes of the league are back in action. I would love to see free agents betting on themselves rather than chasing job security. I understand why they do it. I don't begrudge them it, but I think it'd be really fun if some of these free agents would go cup chasing. That's not something we've really seen in the NHL ever. And there's a lot of guys that could do that. There's only a few teams with a lot of money right now. Colorado's one of them. I don't really know the Islanders situation. I'm guessing they have a lot of money because they threw a lot at Panarin and he didn't take it. So I'm guessing there's some money there to go big game hunting. And, you know, it's going to take a certain kind of free agent who's willing to go to Long Island, because it's not easy to play for Barry Trotz. It's not necessarily fun to play for Barry Trotz. If you're choosing between Colorado's up-tempo style and Barry Trotz's style, which requires a whole lot of effort and a major commitment to defense, you might lean Colorado. But you also might think, well, Barry Trotz has won a championship. There's a pedigree there, so you're going to have to make that decision. But it'll be fascinating to see what these free agents do, because the 7-year, you know, $9 million a year contracts are not going to be out there. So why not go get a 1-year $10 million and see what happens?
Islanders don't necessarily have a crazy amount of space. They have a bunch of long-term contracts that they have to deal with in Nick Leddy and also Johnny Boychuk. And, of course, Andrew Ladd is also the other elephant in the room. So whether he winds up on long-term injury reserve or not, I know he was rumored to potentially be in a deal with Minnesota at the trade deadline last year for Zach Parise. So you never know if they're going to revisit that. As much as I would love for Parise, those over 35 contracts kind of scare me, especially with the amount of money that he's owed. So, but then they have, like I said before, a bunch of the restricted free agents in Matthew Barzal, Ryan Pulock, Taves. I think Beauvillier is 1 year away from being a restricted free agent, if I'm just going off the top of my head. This is a joke for me. I rarely have any notes. As much as like all day I've been thinking about questions, like I didn't write anything down. So,
that's the thing is GMs right now, they're always thinking a couple of years ahead, but they've really got to worry about that, because the cap's going to be 81.5 next year too, probably. It's not going up anytime soon.
Exactly. But there are players that are going to be coming off. Matt Martin, I think, is going to be an unrestricted free agent. So do they offer him a short-term deal to stay? I mean, obviously, he loves the area, and I would hate for him to wind up as a Ranger. Obviously, that's happened before. It wouldn't really be the end of the world, but it would be a little heartbreaking for Islander fans.
He'd basically be Rich Pilon, right? He's like the same guy.
Yeah, basically the same guy. And it's funny, I was just I think I wrote this on Reddit this afternoon that in high school, I played for Bethpage High School Hockey, and my father somehow, as much as he was a Ranger fan, would always wind up with Rich Pilon sticks from Cosby Sports. And they had a rounded, shaved handle on the end, and I just always remember them being full fiberglass and killing my hands in the middle of a game. But regardless, it's going to be interesting all across the league, and teams like the Islanders might actually, you know, and to an extent, even Chicago, you know, they're up against the cap, so they might maybe take on a contract or give away a player in order to get a draft pick. And, you know,
do you have any interest in Brent Seabrook? I'm sure they would love to give you Brent Seabrook.
Only if you take Andrew Ladd back.
That's 6-1, half dozen the other, right?
You know, and that's something else. Like, he was one of the free agents that, you know, teams were clamoring over a couple of seasons ago, and the guy has just not had any luck physically. Knee injuries and back injuries, and just it's a shame. You never want to see a player go through that, and he definitely was a good veteran player, and I liked the move at the time, and I still think that he can contribute in the right situation. But man, like, one game in the playoffs, he played like two games in the regular season close to the trade deadline. just absolutely frustrating there.
That's the thing about those guys who play that hard, heavy game is once the cliff comes, it's pretty precipitous. It doesn't happen gradually.
Precipitous. There's a word for everybody to put in a Scrabble game right there. All right, Mark, anything else you want to add?
No, I appreciate you having me on. It's fun to talk about. I mean, I wrote that. I was a little wary writing that column because you never want to betray your fandom as a journalist. You're always really wary about that. But, Christ, I've been around long enough. I think everybody knows that I grew up an Isles fan. And it's weird. I talk to journalism classes a lot. And all my friends who talk to journalism classes are like always telling people, like, stay away from journalism. It's a terrible industry and there's no jobs. And I'm not that guy. Like, I'm not the guy who warns you to stay away from journalism. I'm the guy that warns you you're going to lose your fandom by going into journalism. That's my warning to young writers out there, because it is going to happen. You might think, nah, man, I bleed this color and this will never change. It changes. It changes. The job changes you. And it's not a bad thing. It's okay. I don't hate the game. I love the sport more than I ever have. But you're going to lose that individual fandom. I don't know, maybe part of that's getting older, but I think it's just the nature of the job is, you know, once you peek behind the curtain, it loses a lot of the magic.
Hey, look, just as much as you're always a Long Islander and you'll always be welcome back, the Islanders fan base welcomes some former players back, I should say, you know, not all. Number 91, I hope you're listening. So, you know, when you're hanging up the keyboard and the notepad and the pens, you're more than welcome to come back and root for the Islanders alongside us anytime, Mark.
I hope I can make it happen. We'll see.
So why don't you throw out there your Twitter handle and where everybody can read your stuff?
Read me at The Athletic. My Twitter is at Mark Lazarus, LAZERUS. And you can find links to all my stories and my book there. And yeah, hope to see you there.
One quick question just to close out. Who did you have as the Norris winner this year?
Roman Josi. I'm no idiot.
Your fellow co-writer over there in Stape had some interesting choices in.
You can find all my ballots on Twitter. I'm not hiding anything.
All right, Mark. I appreciate you coming on, and I'll tag you in this when it's up. So.
All right, thanks.
All right, thank you. All right, big shout out again to Mark Lazarus of The Athletic for coming on the Isles Faithful podcast this episode. Very gracious, and obviously it was a good listen. Hopefully you enjoyed it as much as I did. So as always, subscribe to us wherever you consume podcasts. We are now on Amazon. You could tell your Amazon devices to listen to the Isles Faithful podcast, and Alexa or whatever you so aptly named your devices shall bring it up. You could find us on iTunes, Google, Spotify, Podbean, and wherever else you consume podcasts, as I just said a second time. Follow us on Twitter at IslesBlogger and at FaithfulIsles for up-to-the-minute updates about the show or just random thoughts. And later on this week or over the weekend, we'll have another in-depth episode talking more specifically about the Eastern Conference Finals loss to the Tampa Bay Lightning and what is to come this offseason. So thanks for listening. Let us know what you think on Twitter. Rate and review on iTunes. And as always, let's go Islanders. Speak to you soon.